My name is Douglas Scurry, and I live at the bottom of Market Hill on the riverbank.
When did you first come to Malden, Douglas?
1953. Yeah. 73.
1973. Yeah. Okay. And you moved here, was it with your parents?
No.
Or were you on your own? You're independent
now
then?
That's when we got married.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go back to your parents then. Mm. You say a little bit about them and perhaps how they chose your name?
My parents, Marjorie and Frank. My father was in the RAF reserve during the war. When I was born, my mother wrote to him to tell him I'd been born, and he had a son, and she'd like to call me Nigel. He wrote back and said, Nigel, all right, but first Douglas Nigel, named after an RAF hero of the hour.
Right. Mm. So can you say a bit more about that hero?
Well, the legless pilot, Douglas Bader.
Bader, yes. Yeah. Did you know much about him?
Not a lot. No, I've seen the film, read the book three or four times, and whenever there's an article in the paper about him, I always read it. Yeah.
But obviously, one of your father's heroes.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So you moved to Malden when you were newly married.
Yeah.
Were you working at the time?
Yes. Yeah.
What were you doing?
Just beginning to make lampshades.
Ah.
Yeah.
We'll come on to that in a minute.
Yeah.
So prior to making lampshades, when you'd left school, what was your first two or three jobs? Where were you?
I went to work for a paint manufacturer, and I was going to do the diploma course on paint technology.
Right, right. So that was a little bit along the chemistry line then, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And then the firm closed their South End factory and said, if you want to carry on, you'll have to go and work in the Luton factory. Oh, that's terrible. Worst time of my life, living in Luton after Leon C.
Yes, yeah.
That didn't happen. And after another few years, they packed up completely. So I'd given up the idea of becoming a paint technologist. Mm. But I did learn quite a lot about paint and industrial finishing and furniture finishing and toys and everything that was manufactured had to be finished somehow.
Useful information.
Yeah, and then after about, I was 25 when I set up in business on my own as an agent.
As an agent?
Yeah, manufacturer's agent, working as a freelance representative.
So can you say a bit more about that? What did you do as an agent?
I just sold other people's products. And one day, I bought the paper. I was planning this anyway, but I bought the newspaper because agents were advertised on a Thursday in the Telegraph. Bought the paper, opened it up. There was a firm wanting an agent to cover Eastern England with their wrought iron leaded lights, leaded lanterns, and chandeliers and what have you. It's quite easy. I just phoned them. They said, oh, you know, we're sending the samples. Go on. As easy as that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, while I was reading that paper, a chap came out of the shop over the road, an old school friend, classmate. He said, I'm making lampshades, you know. Come and see. Come and have a cup of tea. And he said, would you? I said, right, I handed in my notice to the paint firm, went and bought a small van, and I started selling his lampshades.
Right.
And it was a good start. I mean, the usual commission is about 10%. He said, I'll pay you 15%, but I want you to deliver the goods at the same time and invoice them for me. Yeah, well, I can do all that.
Was there a good market for them?
Well, I was made a profit the first year. You know, I earned my living.
And how far were you travelling? selling the lampshades?
As far as King's Lynn, that way, and down as far as Worthing, the other way.
Right away.
Near the coast. Yeah. I didn't go inland too much. Not enough salt water.
So that led on to you being interested in doing it yourself, making your own lampshades.
Yeah, and one of the other agencies made similar shades to this. And they said after a year or so, we can't cope with the business you're bringing to us. You'll have to find somewhere else to... So I thought, the best way will be to set up in business properly and get a bit of machinery. And I was beginning to know where to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as time went on, I knew where to buy even more direct than the local wholesalers.
So Douglas has been showing me some really beautiful photographs of wonderful lampshades, which you made. I mean, they look very intricate. How did you learn the trade? Did you have any training?
No. I just took other people's lampshades to pieces to see how they did it.
Right.
And I thought, well, I can do better than that. Yeah.
And slowly you built up?
Slowly, yeah. We made plain simple. Well, we made these on a juke and glued them rather than sewed them, as we used to, sew them top and bottom. We stretched them on a jig and then glued them with Sino acrylate glue. Now, that was a learning curve. What sort of glue would glue to the frame?
Quite. Did you have to buy any sort of special equipment?
No, but a representative came to see me selling super glue. I said, well, yes, I can see what you're talking about. How do we do it? So in front of him, I cleaned up a frame with sandpaper to make sure it was absolutely grease-free, put a drawstring in top and bottom and pulled it like that, top and bottom gently. I couldn't get it on properly because I couldn't do it equally. But as it was cotton, I poured boiling water all over it, shrunk it on tight. I've still got that little thing. After running the glue round, I couldn't believe that just running the glue round, there, click, it was dry, done.
And it held.
It and I said, yes. And I was getting quite excited. And he said, well, what do you think you need to... I said, well, I need some sort of jig to put it on and hold it at the bottom, a drawstring at the top, and perhaps a bit of compression. He said to me, I am an engineer, I should be able to work this out. And literally, on the back of a bit of old card, a bit of old paper, I drew something, and he drew something. He said, I think I know what you want. He came back a few days later with some drawings that he'd done. Do you think that would work? Yes, I think it will work. It will work. Now, I knew the machine, there were machines that did this, and they were all in the multi-£1,000 nonsense. He came back and said, I can get this made for you, complete with a little compressor, for £1,000. And he said, you'll need a pattern for every shape. He said, you can have a few of those, and then he said, you can make the rest of them yourself. Just cut them out of chipboard and...
That was a lot of money, wasn't it, to invest?
It increased our turnover dramatically.
So you were...
And we made a far, far better shade by that method.
You were fairly confident.
Oh, yes.
It was money well spent.
Oh, yes.
And it would work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it did on our four. Then as I was doing it, I've got another 20 years of this. In fact, I did occasionally, when I went into my barn, in the mornings. I thought, oh, I've got another 20 years of this. Because I was going to retire at 60.
Right.
No, I wasn't going to work any longer.
Mm. Mm.
But no, I quite enjoyed doing it. Well, I made most of these myself.
From these photographs, I think they're absolutely fantastic.
And we had home workers to make these.
Oh, right.
And then we brought them into the workshop where we trimmed them.
To finish off.
See,
yeah.
All these tassels are handmade. Yeah. All tassels are handmade.
Are they?
And they're all blended to the colours that I want. They were colour matched.
Yeah.
Like a paint manufacturer, a colour matcher. Mm. We blended the fringes.
Yeah. Yeah. Where did the fabric come from?
The georgette was Japanese, and we bought it from what was called a converter, a wholesaler.
Mm.
Mm. The braid.
Yeah.
We bought the braid from a manufacturer who made the braid. Then we sent it away to someone to have it tasseled, and I would say how many tassels to the foot I wanted.
Yeah.
And in fact, it wasn't so far away. I could go and see him in the East End, and there we would blend, and he would show me how he made the tassels and what have you.
So over the years, you must have made thousands.
Yes.
Thousands of
lampshades. Yeah. There was a time I used to drive around in the evening at night before people drew their cut. Oh, one of my shoes.
Oh.
Yeah. And quite often on television we saw it, I'd say, oh, look. Yes. Yeah.
And did people come to you with special orders?
No. No. We only supplied shops.
You supplied shops?
Yeah.
All over East Anglia?
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you were still going round in your van selling?
Yes, yeah.
Or did you get someone else
to
do that?
I met my customers and saw them and did the deliveries.
Yeah. Very satisfying.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
I think of the terrible weather I was going out in at times. When I look back now,
And your firm was called Scurry Lighting.
Just Scurry Lighting, yeah.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Right, I'm going to move on, Douglas, regretfully, but I know you've had quite a history in sailing.
Yeah.
And I've got a picture in front of me of a boat called, it was a smack, is that right?
Yeah.
Called the Joseph T, built in 1901.
Yes.
How did you acquire that?
A friend of mine had bought it from the fisherman and took it to Kent, where he started doing it up, a bit of planking here and a new spar there, a new sail and what have you. And after a year of working on it, almost every weekend, many evenings, he said, he just didn't turn up one week. And another friend of mine said, he's lost interest in the smack. I'll tell him you want it. Oh, this was my friend interfering again. So our mutual friend sort of organised that I should have the boat because I was going to do it properly and look after it. And he's lost interest because he hadn't been down there for a week. Yeah.
So you sailed it back from Kent?
Yes, yeah.
Did you?
In February.
In a
blizzard of snow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It had a big fire, a caravan stove down below, and that was roaring away.
Had you always been involved in sailing?
Always.
Always,
right. Yeah, continuously from, about 44.
Is that one of the reasons you moved to Malden, do you think? Because the access to the water?
Well,
definitely.
I did. Well, one day I decided I really ought to do something about the future. Yes, I ought to buy a house, but do something about it. Oh, I'm going to Malden next week. So I came to Malden, went in the shop, told them why I was here, apart from trying to sell them lampshades, and she got out the Malden Burnham Standard. Oh, there you are, look, the cheapest house for sale in the Malden and Burnham in 1973 was a house in Volwick Avenue.
Oh,
She said, "Oh yes, what's it? There's the estate agent just out there." We walked across the road, straight away, went down, looked at the house. The old lady wasn't, she was away on holiday. So the estate agent went round to the solicitor to get the key, went down there. I said, "Yeah, I think this'll do. I can't, can't mess about. I don't want to make a fuss about it." Just, I'd already been to the building society, so I knew roughly what.
Yeah, yeah.
What, that'll do. So I told my girlfriend, I said, "I'm thinking of moving to Malvern. I bought a house there." "What about me?" she said. And then the romantic that I am, I said, "Well, do you want to get married then?" "All right then."
"All right." Very romantic, yeah.
Yeah. So we did come back and see the old girl, and she said, "You know, when do you want the house?" She'd given her house to the Malvern Housing Society, Barry Beardall.
Right.
She said, "I'll see Mr. Beardall and ask him when the new places are going to be ready on the London Road." So she saw him and she came back. She said, "I can move into my new flat at the end of September." I said, "All right then, you know, we're going to go see the vicar and think about getting married." It was as easy as that.
Easy as that, yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And, yeah.
So all through these years you've been involved in sailing.
And, yeah.
And was the Smack the first boat you'd owned, or had you owned lots of others?
Well, not lots, but
some.
I'd had two or three others before that, yes.
And did you have to do a lot of work on the Smack?
Continuous lot of work, yeah. But being an old wooden boat, you know, yeah.
And being good with your hands and practical, you could do
it. Yeah, I used to look at the woodwork I did on it. She was not very well built, really. But I used to look at my work and compare it with the original.
Right.
And I thought, well, it's up to that standard. Mm. I would not have paid me, I wouldn't have paid anyone with my skill to do the work.
Right.
But there was, in the building of that boat, there was no love. No love went into it. Joseph Taylor himself was an old man, and he treated himself to a new boat before he died.
Right.
And he had a few years fishing, but he was really retired.
Mm.
And the two shipwrights that did actually build it, they were bankrupt. And and Joseph Taylor was paying their wages.
Yeah.
And they just... And he just said, I just want a new 30-foot smack.
Mm.
And Malvern smacks, most of them were 30-foot long, drawing the same 3'6" of water, no more, and same beam. But within those limits, within that, you can design a beautiful boat, or you can design a boat that just looks at an ordinary old boat. But it was longer. She lasted 100 years.
So. Yeah, quite. Did you sail far in that boat? Did you go out regularly?
Regularly round to Kent, down to Suffolk, and Suffolk.
Yeah.
Only the east coast and all the Kentish creeks.
And your wife came with you?
Yeah.
So the two of you just took the two of you to sail the boat.
Yeah. Until we had the second daughter.
Right.
And then it was all too much for...
Yes, not so easy with children.
Two daughters and a dog. Yeah. And my wife wouldn't let me sell the boat to buy a family boat. We did have the chance of a proper family boat.
Mm.
And she knew what it was. "Oh, I don't like that. No, not having that."
So in the end, did you sell this?
I sold her to someone that started rebuilding her. Unfortunately, he did quite a lot of rebuilding, and then he fell in love with another boat and he started working on that and neglected this. In the end, it was so neglected, in the end it had to be chopped up, cut up, and burnt. Yeah.
Oh.
And she was the very last of the true proper Malvern smacks.
The last Malvern smack.
Owned by the Claydon brothers,
who
were a proper Malvern fisherman. She spent most of her life on the beach here, where she is now. Yeah.
So what boat have you got at the moment, Douglas?
I've got a 30-foot masthead sloop designed by Maurice Griffiths, very well-known yacht designer on this part of the world.
Mm. Yeah. And you sail regularly?
Yes, yeah.
Much as you can?
Yeah, yeah.
And you sail from Malden?
Yes, yeah.
Great.
She's sitting in the... She's just coming afloat now.
Right.
Just off the prom down there.
Yeah. I'll look out for her. What's her name?
Evenstar.
I'll look out for her.
Yeah, yes. Dark
we
green.
Often call boats her, don't we? Or
yeah,
she?
We do. The yes. French don't.
No.
No.
Right.
Well, then, you know, the French. They're foreigners, aren't they?
Say no more. Say no more. Right, let's move on, because I've been told that for many, many years you've been extremely involved in the poppy collection.
Mm-hmm.
How did all that start?
I got waylaid, of course. I didn't volunteer.
You had your arm twisted, did you?
Yeah. The local organiser couldn't be about at the time of the poppies being delivered, on the day the poppies were going to be delivered.
Right.
Could I be about to see them in?
Was this a neighbour? Someone nearby?
Yes, just along the down. Right. In fact, we had been immediate neighbours.
Right.
Yes, he used to live immediately behind me.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew him. He had an old boat and he thought he was an old salt, and we talked and... Yeah.
So
Sholto took over from Les.
Sholto, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So your friend encouraged you just to make a start.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another?
One thing led to another, and when Les wanted to back up, he wanted me. He thought I was going to take over. But we never told him. But I said, Les, Sholto will be very... I think we could persuade him.
That's Sholto
Morton. Yeah, so Sholto came round to find out what it was all about, and we conned Sholto into saying, well, there's not a lot you have to do, and there's always someone else to help you here, and there's a good team. And it didn't worry him, because Sholto was jumped in with both feet.
Brilliant.
And
he
loves it.
When was this? How many years ago?
Oh, 13, 14 years ago now.
So every year... You've been involved. Do you distribute the poppies to the different collectors? What do you do?
Yeah. Well, that's we have a bigger team now. But it,
course,
you know, when I first started, it was a matter of emptying all the boxes, assembling the new boxes, filling them up with poppies, putting the pins in, and the labels, and sticking labels on top of the collecting box, putting those in the box, distributing all around to the schools, the shops and the factories. We were doing a lot of work. Yeah. And then standing a week outside the town hall. So that was the easiest way to do it. And I was quite happy doing it, talking and meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Naval Association... They looked after the collection. They organised the collectors for an hour or two at a time at places like Tesco's and supermarkets. And then at the end of the fortnight, we had to get everything collected back in and check that we'd got everything back in. So I was very much involved in all that.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we were frightened with all this money we had. We had to get it into the bank.
Yes.
And even those days we were talking about... 7, 8, 9, 10,000 pounds.
Wow.
And then what happened? And we were counting the money in those days in the Moot Hall.
I was going to ask that. Where did you do the counting?
Yeah. It'd been done there for years, apparently. Yeah. And when the town council realised how much money was involved, they were horrified. And I said, well, it's the safest. The safest building, you know, when locked up and all the security in Mold. Oh no, we can't have that. So we had to move and find somewhere else to count the money. So as it happened, it worked out all right.
But, and then you had to get it from the place where you were counting to the bank.
That had to be disguised, you know, by. And we were all old people, and we all had to look as if, you know, we were out doing our shopping and shopping bags and what have you. So we'd phone up the bank and say, right, we're ready, we're coming now. And we would try, can we put it in the car and come round to the back of the bank, and will you open the back door and let us in that way? So one clerk said, good idea, you know. So we phoned up to say we're coming. Someone else answered the phone, probably the manager, I don't know. I'm not allowing that. You've come in through the front door. So we had to park the car in the high street and carrying bags of money in a bit to... Yeah, oh, so the whole town knew, you know, professional thieves would have worked out what we were doing, yes, and who, yeah, we were.
Yeah.
So we always had that worry.
Of course.
Yeah.
And are you still doing this?
Yeah. Oh, yes, we're getting ready for next November. Yeah.
Douglas, we'll go back a little bit, back to when you first bought your boat, the Smack. I understand that when you sailed into Malden and met some local people, they recognised the boat?
Oh, yes.
Is that true? What happened?
Well, they want to know who I was and what I was doing in one of their boats and where I'd come from.
With the Malden Smack?
Yeah. Yeah. So I soon got to know people on the waterfront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They must have been very pleased that you'd sort of, as it were, rescued the boat to bring it back to Malden.
Yes. Yes, well, one of the three brothers who owned it, he said that he said to me, now the boat's loved and looked after. He said, I can die at peace. I thought, oh, what a lovely thing to say.
Oh, nice. So, who did you know people at the Cook's Boat Yard? Did they give you advice and help on?
Well, I knew that was about the time that Barry Pierce and Gordon Swift had bought the yard. Davy Patience I knew long before he started teaching. Shipwriting. Yeah.
Did
he was
you?
Still a student when I knew Davy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now he's an old boy.
And they all gave you advice and helped.
Yes, we all talked, found out how to do it, and
Good. So, remind me, how many years did you own the Smack?
I think 31, 32 years.
Did you?
Almost as long as the Claydon brothers owned her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had some really good times on that boat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Douglas. Thank you very much.